Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Welcome. Good morning. How you doing? It's me, Jesse, here for Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio at Simon Fraser University, on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Hokomelem and Squamish speaking peoples. You can listen online at cjsf.ca or on our new app, which you can find on the Google Play or Apple App Store, to stream and save your favorite shows. Today on the program, the third part of a three-part series called The Seventh. You heard parts one and two on Monday and Tuesday, respectively. If you missed those, you can find them on our website, cjsf.ca. But we've got that. That will take up a chunk of the show, as well as some music, my regular What Did Jesse Find in the Archives segment, and some talking, I guess. Lots of talking. So let's get right into the music. And as usual, we're going to start with some local music. And this comes from one of my favorite Vancouver-based acts of all time. What would I call them? I was going to say Elder Statesman, but that feels wrong. But they've been around in the Vancouver music scene. When I first started to really take an interest and dive in the early 2010s, late 2000s, they had already been up and running for years at that point, and they have continued to put out release after release after release. Have continued to just sort of epitomize the Vancouver DIY music spirit. And they surprise dropped a new album called Amethyst this past Friday, the 23rd. And we are going to hear a track from that called Sunset Over IKEA, from the record Amethyst by Apollo Ghosts, here on Speak Up. Advice.
the sun that sets on me. The sun that sets on me.
Sunset Over IKEA by Apollo Ghosts from the brand new record Amethyst, which is out now, came out just under a week ago today, recorded at the Noise Floor on Gabriel Island, and fans of the Vancouver's independent music scene will recognize the signature Jordan Coop Noise Floor sound there, recorded live off the floor. Okay, now we're going to pivot to part three of the seventh, Artists on the Radio, curated by Jen Jackson. This is the third part of a three-part radio series with artists Lauren Brebner and James Nehwa Kalaswalaktun-Harry, a conversation between artists and other thinkers. Together, the artists discuss Coast Salish design principles and intersectional collaboration as it relates to the exhibition The Seventh, which is on view at the Ore Gallery, or which was on view at the Ore Gallery from October 15th to February 10th, 2024. The artist conversation engages the exhibition's principles of indigenous representation and land-based gestures in contemporary art. This is a really cool talk. It is part three, so if you need to get up to speed, you can head to cjsf.ca and find parts one and two, which aired on Monday and Tuesday. This conversation was recorded Saturday, November 25th, at the David Moafagian World Art Center at Simon Fraser University, and was co-sponsored by Ore Gallery, SFU Galleries, and the Audane Foundation. And we're very happy here at CJSF to be able to present it to you. So enjoy part three, and I'll talk to you after.
Structure, but also our commitment to support the capacity of art to unsettle these conditions. We would like to welcome each of you to this really special panel today. And I'm very grateful for the vision of Jen Jackson, the Ore Gallery Director, in creating this partnership for our program today. Now I'll welcome Jen Jackson to speak. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us on this beautiful afternoon for the seventh panel conversation on Coast Salish design principles and intersectional collaboration with artists James McCullis, Wolactin-Harry, Wolactin-Rick-Harry, Tex Natsis Weiss will be joining us shortly, and and Aaron Nelson Moody, also known as Splash, our wonderful colleague and friend, artist Lauren Bremner, and the star of the show, Baby Hannah, are unable to join us today as they are under the weather. I am Jen Jackson. My pronouns are she, her. I am the director at Orr Gallery and the curator of the set. It is an honor to be here today and to welcome stories of the land from our esteemed panelists. The stories that will be shared this afternoon offer an active and ongoing acknowledgement that the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples and territories are timeless, that the rich and culturally diverse descendants of this territory are always in dialogue with the Hunkaminos and Squamish voices that echo upon the land. Today, artists will discuss Coast Salish design principles and intersectional collaboration as it relates to Lauren and James' exhibition 7th, on view at Orr Gallery until February 10th, 2024. Together, they will discuss the exhibition's principles of Indigenous representation and land-based gestures in contemporary art. The conversation that we will share today acknowledges calls for Indigenous sovereignty across and in solidarity with communities near and far. It offers an opening for discussion on the ways that we can stand with each other and direct our voices to powerful change. Splash, I know you do a lot of work with youth. You do work in community, and you also make space to do work at Langara and Emily Carr, and have all of these courses that you brought forward for our youth. It would be wonderful to hear about your experience and knowledge and sharing tradition and kind of intercultural connection.
Our drums never fail, just so. LCM, yeah. Thanks, Halakha, for giving the real translation of my name. I usually tell people it means like Mighty Warrior or something. Halakha's father, when we came back from Bella, we pulled a 55-foot canoe for weeks up north to Bella Bella. That's when it really got to know Halakha better. And when I came home, he heard him calling me Splash, and he was looking at me really intently. He said, "They're kind of calling you by your mistakes." He said, "That's not good." He said, "It'll hurt your feelings a little bit every time you'll hear it." So he said, "We're going to change that. We're going to call you Toss and Yuhuala. And stand you up in front of our community and give you this name." Because he said, "You're like a young eagle," which is how it translates. And Splash and Young Eagle is how it translates. And he said, "You're like a young eagle." He said, "You're very clumsy, you're very awkward." And I said, "You know, thanks, Chief." And he said, "You know, that's not bad. There's nothing wrong with that." He said, "One day he just spoke for you, but he was soaring like a mature eagle." He said, "It's okay to be clumsy and awkward at first." And did a bunch of work with me about how well I could speak our language, or how well I could sing. He tested me with all these things. He's like, "Yeah, you're not that good at that stuff." But he said, "You've been to public school. You've grown up reading and writing in English, which is rare. Hard day for people make it through our school system." And he said, you're willing to do this work, and I had a background in writing. So he asked me to work in our education department. And he sort of made it seem like not knowing stuff was okay, because I put myself in the shoes of the students. Hardly any of our kids made it through our public education system at that time. I think 12% retention rate at that time, as an average, so I'm not sure what ours was in Sound School District. But he said, "You know how bad school was." He said, "There's students there right now who are having just as bad a time. Some of us have to go back, as uncomfortable as it is." So I got to work with Lachlan and sister, some other members of our community, and we went back into schools, and there wasn't any mention of our Squamish culture anywhere in the curriculum, anywhere in the whole school district. So we go through our entire school career not hearing one word that we still existed. And speaking with teachers, speaking with community leaders, they thought we were an extinct people. Or if they talked about us, they talked about Haida, or our prairie people, because that's what they knew. They didn't know that we were still around. They only saw evidence of other nations. Nothing against those other people. I think they're wonderful people, and it's better than nothing to have that in the curriculum. But we were slowly being erased, you know, from our own territory. We had very little agency in our own land. So we've been sort of wanting to to let people know we're still here, wanting to let people know that we have, you know, beautiful elders and ancient stories and very interesting living culture. So we want to have our students grow up in a world where they didn't feel erased. Even to the point where my citizenship in my own nation was erased. We were taken out of our, we weren't technically allowed to live on reserve when I was a kid, because we didn't even have our Indian status. Someone else controlled who was considered a citizen of Squamish. So so many rights were taken away from us, and even the visibility of us. And we just want to make things better for this next generation. And I can remember this funny moment when I was apprenticing with Hawk, and he had another apprentice there as well. And James walked up, he's like 9 or 10, and he said, "My dad pays you, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." He said, "How much do you make an hour?" So I told him, and he went over to the other apprentice, and here I'm talking to him. And I guess Hawk had said he was going to hire him for the day, but he wanted to make sure he was being paid fairly. So he came around, see how much we made. Then he went over and told him what he wanted to be paid enough. And we were thinking, you know, just how smart he was, you know, at a young age. The first time I saw this little guy, he was running across a life-size Monopoly board. It was an indigenous art project, so it was an indigenous Monopoly board. And I was taking a photo for a newspaper, and he was just running through the frame, and I had no idea who he was. And then the next time I saw him, his father was cutting a gigantic log in half with a huge chainsaw. He was just standing right there. And I was thinking, you know, someone's going to save this kid. But it's like, he knew exactly, you know, how to be around tools. So he grew up in this environment where not only was our art being made on a daily basis, it seemed very normal to tell our stories, to hear our language, to live in a cultural way, to be engaged in ceremony, to not feel so withdrawn and scared from the world, but to go out into the world and rebuild our visibility, rebuild our culture. And I thought, what a wonderful environment to grow up in. We couldn't help but think, you know, if we'd had the chance to grow up that way, you know, maybe things would have been easier on us the entire time. So I think it's important to go back into these institutions. It's not terribly comfortable, even for me. But I'm working in school right now, and I've heard these stories about how hard it is to work in a public institution, and this is the motivation for me being there. It's the only reason I'm in that place. So I've worked in a few different, actually quite a few of the post-secondary institutions around, in one way or another, and we still do community work, but I try to balance it with the work I do in community. So if I get called to do a talk, I'll try to scrounge up some student to bring with me, just so that they know how to do it. How to go and how to speak to people, how to do a presentation, and make sure I get them paid as well. So I get to bring students with me in the sort of the modern world or the larger community. But we also do work in community. So James actually, I used to be able to afford this guy to be my apprentice. And I think I had him holding the biggest piece of copper in the world while I hammered it all day long. I think it's what motivated him to go back to school.
I do think it's
worth having a sense of balance. We're not just trying to, you know, be a good gallery artist. We're not just trying to be a good, you know, museum artist. We're trying to be people in our community who make things that people use, who share our stories, the value of our stories. Just listening to Cease talk about how to prepare the land and how to nurture traditional growth. And of course, the leaf floods and fires, and then she'll start her work all over again. And not alone, but there's a lot of people. I always hear people who talk about Cease and working with her and how much they learned from her. And that kind of work to prepare the land for growth is kind of what I got to see James grow up in the world, a bit more of our, a bit more like what we had historically. And you know, he's reached really far with it. I got a lot of admiration for James and his work. I love talking with him. We get really nerdy about Coast Salish Art, like really specifically nerdy about little things. And we just phone up and check with each other sometimes, just funny little details, how to do a thing. Someone who can help us do a thing, you know, it's just, I love the relationship. So because I studied with his father, it's one of the reasons I'm kind of like family, I guess, adopted family is in a way. So I'm like an uncle. I feel that way about James and about a lot of our youth, that I should be there for them. And sometimes that means going into a public institution and developing a class that doesn't feel so foreign, where we don't have to give up all of our values and all of our identity to get a good grade, a passing grade, and to get funding to go to the place in the first place. Also, our identity exists in this larger world. Everyone forgot we were here. They make decisions on our territory that affect our life every single day without even knowing we exist, so no consideration for us at all. And I can only imagine, I've heard people I've heard professors tell me, we privileged this culture over yours because it was extremely hierarchical or extremely patriarchal. So they didn't really have a value for how we lived our lives. They didn't understand the structure, the high value, the high collaborative value of leadership in our sort of the male-female balance in our communities. The reasons that some of the finest art we do is actually on the work that carvers or men provided for women in their work. And that wasn't a value that was something you could sell to a gallery that easily. But we're able to bring our art back out in the public now. And I think it's beautiful. Our work is beautiful. I think the values and the stories behind them are beautiful. And I think it's something important to share because I got to tag along. I think it was in the back of the van for about 1,000 miles in Scotland. I had no idea my father had come from there, but we got to see what colonization looks like 50, 100 years down the same path we're on here in Canada. We got to see where it went, and people were longing for tradition. They were longing for community gatherings. They were longing for the chance to just sit around and make something, tell stories, you know, share some food. So I got to see a lot and help not just our own community, the public here, but also being sought in other parts of the world for the very thing he just does for free everywhere he goes here, which is just bringing our people together, sharing something beautiful. So I think those are traditions worth preserving and worth celebrating. And in James's unique way, where I might not have made very much an hour for it, he finds out what it's actually worth. And he's doing it a lot more professionally. Just admiring, because every time he puts up a piece, it's like he lifts us all up. We can be proud of what he does. Because it's not like he's ripping around on the res, driving fast and acting crazy. He's also a good man. You know, like Clockett said, he's got a lot of people watching him, and if he makes a mistake, he tees and toes out. So he's not one of those artists who's, you know, sometimes you love someone's art and you find out the backstory and like, oh, they're kind of a jerk, right? This guy's pretty good. He lives his life in a holistic way, like his father, like, you know, the family around him. And I think that's important. Because anyone can do something great, you know, in public, then run around and act crazy. But what we're really trying to rebuild here is our community, and to live up to the values we're speaking about in our artwork. We should be living up to our own values. And I think that's something really, I think it's why so many people are fascinated by our work, because it expresses an idea that we're all, you know, wanting to articulate in some way.
Thank you, Splash. That was really wonderful. Hearing all of you speak, it reminds me, you know, the work that you're doing on the landscape, and for how many generations it will be embodied in the people that you're sharing your knowledge with, and the way that the land will be transformed for many generations into the future. Well, Acton, hearing about these carving and house posts that are being raised and the decades that they'll be with us on the territory, and Splash, hearing about the longing for community and the ways that there's been transformation and connection with youth. James, I thought maybe before we go to questions to the audience, it connects for me with the way that you and Lauren were talking about seven generations
and thinking about 7 generations into the future and how this work was created for your daughter, Hannah.
Yeah, I mean, it's wonderful hearing you all talk, and it just makes me think about how it's even possible for myself to be able to produce at this level, because it takes a village. And the whole idea of this project stemmed from everything that we've really been talking about, in this idea of just assimilation and the erasure of our people and what the Canadian government has done to us. It started with conversations with my grandma Gwen Marion, thinking about how when she told us, I was doing an interview with her because I wanted to document her talking about her time in residential school, because nobody's really ever done that in our family. So I thought it would be important to do that. But as she was talking, she mentioned that it was her great-grandma that was the first to have gone to residential school and be the first point of contact with European settlers. And then we sort of added that up, that it was actually when Hannah was being born, because she said, oh, Hannah, she's the 7th generation. And in that moment, we realized that it was that, you know, the community that you guys have helped me become who I am, is that she is now at sort of the pinnacle of that healing and that process, where she's going to have that support in that community. And thinking about that is really the truth to that is that it's what it's going to take for our people to really come back. And I know it's a lot of pressure on her, I think the idea of just the support and the roles that, you know, each and every one of us feel like we have an obligation, or we have to, because we are the only ones left doing it, or there's like not enough of us doing it. So there's also like a scarcity that if we stop doing what we're doing, it's going to cease to exist. So there's sort of an urgency for us to continue doing this work, and we're doing it in all various areas, whether that's like the tradition of wood carving or education or ethnobotany or public sculpture. Like, there's all these different mediums that we're having to work through in order to bring more awareness and raise more awareness. And that's why I felt that, like, working with Lauren on this, which was really, it was really the inspiration for us, was because it was actually my dad who pushed us to continue to work together, because we weren't actually sure at the time whether or not we should, because Lauren was like, it was hard for Lauren, because I know she felt she had to do the work as well in order to feel to speak on these subjects, because it is very deep and goes, you know, I've been immersed in my whole life, and I know that's a hard thing to do, but I think you look at that as a symbol for what it means for Canadians at large to work with it. So it is going to be hard, but if you're not going to be willing to put in the work to do it, it's never going to change. So I like to look at our collaborations, our intersectional collaborations, as a symbolic gesture to moving forward for Canadians to think about what does that look like? Well, here's what it looks like. And provide imagery that is inspiring and changes our ways of thinking and understanding in the world and relationship to land. Like, there's so many things that run deep through the work that we've done that I think is only just the start of the ripple, the pebble dropping. And I know it's going to take time, because that's why I'm saying 7th generation being Hannah, even the education system for her is going to be different. She's going to be able to go to little one's school and learn the language just like Stanley, and have the language not be taught